Now we're going to start. Okay, tonight we're on Kapitel Samech Zion 67. And the title of tonight is, What's That on Your Sword? This Kapitel only has 8 Pesukim in it. There are only 8 verses in this Kapitel. It's a very short Kapitel. And this Kapitel was first seen by Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu had a vision sometime in his life, and he had a vision of a pure gold sheet, like a flat sheet of pure gold, and on it, the words to this Kapitel were written in the shape of a menorah. Chazal tell us that David HaMelech, 400 years later, had the same vision. So the words to this Kapitel were first shown to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then were shown to David. The Kapitel is only 8 Pesukim is replete with probably one of the most highest, what's the word I'm looking for, one of those intense levels of Kabbalistic commentary on any of the Kapitel after on this. It was a vision that came to Moshe, it was a vision that came to David, and we'll see that there's a lot of things in it. We're not going to go too far into the Kabbalistic things tonight. We don't want anybody floating away by accident or anything. But the Kapitel, if you can see that a Kapitel that was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu in a vision, and then to David in a vision, obviously has significance. And it was shown to them in the shape of the menorah. That's the shape that's on this second handout here. This is the way that they saw the Kapitel, the shape of this menorah here. And actually, I'll just maybe move down a little bit. You know, nobody likes to sit towards the front. You know, it's like you come in, shul always fills from the back. Have you ever noticed that? Like, you know, you can tell how full shul is just by looking at the front row. We're getting another chair this one. So it was actually, this is the shape of the menorah, and this is the shape the Kapitel was shown to them. David HaMelech had this engraved on his shield. Now, we have an expression, Magen David, the shield of David, and that's what we call that the six-pointed star that is a big symbol in our days. That six-pointed star, as the Magen David, comes from the following source. Nowhere. It is not a historical, deep-rooted, religious Jewish tradition going back to biblical times. Best guess is it came about in the 1400s sometime, and it had nothing to do with much of anything, and somehow it became adopted as a Jewish symbol. And there's much discussion. Well, it has 6 points, and it's 6 points all direction, and it's different triangles. And all of that's beautiful, but in the times of David, it was an unknown thing. Right? When we say the Magen David, we don't mean the six-pointed star that we call Magen David today. This was the Magen David. This was what was engraved on David HaMelech's shield. And David HaMelech used to study this and concentrate on it before he would go into battle. And he attributed his success in battle to the merit of learning and studying these 8 Pesukim that were engraved in the shape of the menorah. Now there's a Medrash, and I don't know exactly what this means, but we could take it for the Medrash says that concentrating on this Kapitel and its meaning is similar to the schus, the merit that was provided by the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if you'd like to know exactly how that works, I really don't know, all right? But the point of it is that this is obviously a very important subject here, and David HaMelech considered this to be so important that he engraved it on his shield and attributed his success in battle to it. Now, it is customary to say this Kapitel before counting the Omer in between Pesach and Shavuos. Now I know when I say this, somebody's going to not believe me and going to start counting. But after the introduction, there are 49 words in the Kapitel. I'm sorry. This Kapitel is said in Shul before counting the Omer, in between Pesach and Shavuos. We count the Omer for 49 days, and there are 49 words in this kapitel after the introduction, Lamed Atzeach. I know that sometime tonight someone's not going to believe that, and when I'm not looking, they're going to count, but actually, when I saw it in the four sheet, I counted two, because you just got to see it for yourself. But there are 49 words. So you see, it's in the menorah. It's connected somehow to the menorah in the base of Mikdash. David HaMelech ascribed his success to the study and the engraving of this kapitel, and it has 49 words representing the Jews going from leaving Mitzrayim for 49 days to getting the Torah. So you can see where there's a lot of probably more depth to this than we'll learn, but this is the 49-word kapitel that David HaMelech would concentrate on all the time when he would go into battle. And we today say before counting the Omer, and it basically describes the blessings, the brachas that await us in the times of Mashiach in exchange for us embracing the Torah. And those eight pesukim, that's what it's going to describe for us. So let's jump right in. As usual, just jump in with any questions. I live for questions. It doesn't mean I'll answer them, but I love to hear questions. So the first Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Lamed Atzeach, Miniginos, Mizmor, Shir. Lamed Atzeach, as we've discussed before, means for the conductor. And there was a conductor. In other words, remember that Tehillim were sung from the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. And if you've ever been in a choir where there's no one in charge, you know what happens. Somebody has to be in charge of the choir, and Lamed Atzeach, most of the Forshim believe, is actually referring to an instruction to the conductor of this particular kapitel to be played on the neginos. Now, who here could tell me what neginos look like? Nobody? Yeah, we have no idea. That was just a trick question. Right? It's a stringed instrument, but we don't know what it looks like. There are a lot of stringed instruments that David HaMelech refers to that we have a general idea, even sometimes we know how many strings they have, but we don't really, if you sat down with a woodworker today and said, build me this instrument, you wouldn't be able to do it. You wouldn't be able to give him specific enough instructions. And it's a mizmor and a shir. It's both a mizmor and a shir. Most things we've learned up until now have been either a mizmor, or once in a while we've had a shir. This is a mizmor and a shir. It's very, very, very happy. Now, from now on, there are going to be 49 words. Now, it's interesting. I just said I wasn't going to throw in any Kabbalistic things, but I guess I lied. Because in the first verse, the Al-Sheikh said, this is a very strange way. You have this vision of the kapitel, and it's engraved on a shield, and it says, for the conductor on a stringed instrument, it's a mizmor and a shir. So he says, you know why there are four words in the first verse, says the Al-Sheikh? Because there are four components to the world: human, animal, vegetable, and mineral. And the fact that there's four words that are an introduction to the 49 are representing that these four words are a universal introduction to the 49 words that we're about to see. If that makes sense. So let's see what the 49 words are. It says, Elokim yichananu v'yavarchainu, that Hashem should be gracious and bless us, yar panav itanu, and that He should cause His face to shine toward us, Sala. What happened to the nekudos that were in here? Okay, well, it's Mrs. Perman's fault if the nekudos are not here, because I did her cutting and pasting as she told me, and pasted it in, and somehow when I printed it, the nekudos are missing, so.
Oh, it's a full responsibility.
Mrs. Perman was my computer consultant here, and so Mrs. Perman takes all responsibility. And so it says, Hashem should be gracious to us, He should bless us, and He should cause His face to shine towards us. So he's saying three things. Gracious to us, that refers to saving us from trouble. blessing us, giving us a bracha, Ivarcheinu, refers to giving us a bracha of wealth, possessions, long life, and material things. And Ya'ir Panav, shining his face upon us, refers to causing us to achieve understanding. It's interesting that the highest level bracha here that we're asking Hashem for is the ability to understand. That when we understand, we can do so much more. So we want Hashem to give us, save us from trouble, Chaneinu, give us a bracha of success, Yivarachenu, and Ya'ir Panav Itanu, to turn his face towards us, Selah. Right away we have a Selah here. Who can translate Selah for me? Anybody? Oh, okay, good. Yeah, we don't really know what that word means. Selah, it's used as a punctuation, and it may mean something like, yeah, or here, right? But it's unusual to have, and we've only had one verse after the introduction so far, we're already up to Selah. We haven't even, you know, built up to anything. Usually we get a nice Selah after we've been going for a while. Here we got a Selah after one verse. We got a bracha and we got a Selah already.
This is like
Mirkas Akonim. Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. Indeed, it is very similar to the Birkas Kohanim. And in fact, the Rashbam points out that it is very similar to the Birkas Kohanim. And we are asking for the same things that we ask in those brachas. Excellent. Excellent point. Now, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, actually, Chaneinu, he has a little bit different explanation. He says, Chaneinu is like in Shemona Esrei when we say, Ata Chonein La'adam Das, that we're really asking for intellectual help, because it's hard for us to understand the way the world works and all the things that happen, and it'll be so much easier if we could understand what was going on. So we're asking that Chaneinu, help us to understand what's going on. And finally, in a sort of drosh way, the Tehillas Hashem says that he agrees with everything that we just said, but he'd like to add that Ya'ir Panav, that causing his face to shine upon us, has an even deeper meaning. Because people are created with Tzelem Elokim. Everybody has a Tzelem Elokim, a part of holiness within them. This Ya'ir Panav, shining your light upon us, right? Shining your face upon us, is that we want always to try and reflect back to you the Tzelem Elokim. That we want to reflect as much as we can the Tzelem Elokim and strive to reflect back the same holiness that Hashem is reflecting to us. Selah. In the next pasuk, he says, Ledas ba'aretz darkecha b'chol goyim yishuasecha. Yishuasecha or yishuasecha? Yishuasecha. Yishuasecha. Right? That your ways should be known to the earth, and that all the nations should know of your salvation. So make you should be known throughout the earth. Let's remember what the original assignment given to us was, to be a light amongst the nations. It was our assignment originally to go out and show the world that there's a one God, that there is Hashem, and this is the proper way to serve Him. So David HaMelech is getting back to that and say, Ladas ba'aretz darkecha, that everybody will know throughout the earth and all about your salvation, that will be successful in setting, an example and accomplishing the goal of being a light amongst the nations. And that's what it means, to be known among the earth and salvation amongst the nations. Now, I just said I wasn't going to get any deeper, and I lied once again. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch has a very long thing over here where he says, you know what? Why is it that he says you have to be known among the earth and they have to know of your salvation? Of course Hashem is going to save them. Who else is going to save them? It would seem a little bit repetitive. that we should know, that they should know about Hashem in the earth, all across the earth, and all the nations. Well, who else lives in the earth but nations? And again, it seems a little bit repetitive. So Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says that that really Hashem runs the world in sort of two ways. It's sort of a duality. On the one hand, Hashem's in charge of everything. We all know that, right? Hashem runs the world. We don't always understand exactly how the plan is supposed to work, but Hashem's in charge of the world. And he runs everything towards his ultimate goals and plans. On the other hand, Hashem gives us instructions as to how we're supposed to run the world and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, if you think about it, it's a bit of a contradiction. If Hashem is running things, so let's let Hashem run things. Get up in the morning and let Hashem put food on the table. On the other hand, if we're supposed to be doing things, so let us, you know, why is it that Hashem sort of has the Hashem is doing things method and the here's what I want all the people to do method? So Rav Hirsch says that the reason for that is that even those people that in the world that recognize Hashem don't all necessarily follow his instructions. But come times of Mashiach, people will recognize not only the purpose in Hashem's plan, but the purpose in the instructions that Hashem has given us. So he's making a very deep point here. I don't know if we want to dwell on it or not, but he's saying that people will not only recognize Hashem, which we always say, and everybody will realize that Hashem is Hashem, it sounds sort of. And everybody will recognize Hashem, and they won't serve anything else. But also people will recognize what they themselves are supposed to do. That Hashem runs the world, and he has a job for us to do. And that recognition that there's really two parts to the way Hashem runs the world is why there's two things here. It says, your knowledge will be in the all over the world. People will know what to do, and they'll be willing to do whatever their job is. B'chol goyim ishu asecha, and all the nations will realize that in you is their salvation. They'll recognize that you run the world. There's a medrash that says that the reason that we were spread across the world in exile is two purposes. One, to expose the world to Torah and the idea of Hashem. And two, so that we will gain converts and that we'll increase the number of Jewish people. Which is an amazing medrash, because usually we think of converts as something that are discouraged from Judaism. Yet there's a medrash that says that indeed one of the purposes of exile of Galus is so that we will gain converts, because it only makes sense that if we're being a light unto the nations, someone's got to see the light. No pun intended, right? If we spend thousands of years in Galus, someone has got to realize, hey, you know what? Maybe they're right. Those people will become Gerim and will become converts and will join Klal Yisrael and thus will merit the benefit that they will receive when the times of Mashiach come.
Maybe they're referring to the neshamas that originally were supposed to become Jewish. In other words, those goyim who were supposed to be goyim will remain goyim, but there were neshamas like Bruce who was supposed to become Jewish, which he did. So there will be Jewish people. There will be people who, for whatever reason, did not become Jewish people. Because of being among Jewish people, those neshamos that were intended to be, they will become. Because I don't think that this could resolve the idea that we do not want converts. We only want those who were intended to be.
Excellent. I agree completely. And in fact, there's a medrash that says that, you know, Hashem offered the Torah to all the nations. And they said no. Medrash says, do you really think every single person said no? There could have been individuals that were willing, right? So those, but the whole nation wasn't. So those people eventually, over time, in Galus, will be attracted back. And they really, those people should have been Jewish in the first place, right? Like you're saying. And eventually, those will become the people that will become converts, right? And those are the people that we want to become converts because they really had the neshama that wanted the Torah in the first place. I completely.
Yeah,
100%. Okay, in Pasuk Dalet, in verse 4, it says, Yaducha Amim Elokim, the peoples will give thanks unto Hashem. Yaducha Amim Kulam, and all of the nations will give thanks. Now, I, first of all, for those of you who have never been to this shir before, I apologize that this translation is full of these and thys and thous. These printouts are from a site that offers this service for free. So we don't have to copy any copyrighted material or anything. The only disadvantage is that there's a lot of these and thys and thous. So sometimes if I have time, I replace all the thous and these with yous. If not, just make that little mental adjustment there. So the peoples give thanks unto you, and the nations will give thanks unto you. Okay? Well, that seems to be redundant once again. So the reason it's said twice, Rav Hirsch explains, is that the world coming to recognize Hashem at the end of days is not an instant process. It comes about slowly. More and more people recognize Hashem. More and more people attach themselves to Klal Yisrael. More and more people see that Hashem and His Torah are Amis. And that's Yaducha Amim Elokim. And that happens gradually over a long period of time. Then finally comes Mashiach and Yaducha Amim Kulam. Then everybody, Kulam, everybody has to recognize. But it's sort of, it doesn't all of a sudden happen in one day, that it's a sort of gradual process. And that's why it's repeated twice. Now then in verse Hey, in Pasuk Hey, he even gets more complicated. He said, Yismechu. And it says, Yismechu v'irananu le'umim, that the nations will rejoice and sing. Ki sishpot amim mishor ul'umim ba'aretz tanchem salav. And thou will judge the people and lead the nations onto the earth. Selah, another Selah. You know, we've been months in this year without seeing a Selah, and we just saw two of them. Could be I'm even saying that because there's going to be a reason for it. So the nations are going to be rejoicing, and then the nations are going to be judged. Well, it doesn't sound like they should be rejoicing quite yet then, does it? Maybe they should wait till they're judged. So he's saying, Yismechu Yiranenu le'umim. The umim are not the amim. There's two different kinds of nations here, Rav Hirsch says. There's umim and amim. And of course, since the Nekudos didn't come out on the printout, you can't see that, but there's umim and amim. Umim, he says, are different than amim. The people that are going to rejoice are the umim. Because if those are nations, he makes a very fine difference here. The umim are states and governments, he said, which are in charge of a group of people. Those are called umim. And amim, he says, are groups of people led by others. Now, you're going to very rightly ask, isn't that the exact same thing? And he goes on to try and make this distinction, that umim are people led by leaders, and they're being led in the right direction. So therefore, the umim who are going to rejoice when Mashiach comes because they have been tolerant and helpful to the Jews, they have waited for this day themselves, they will be Yismechu v'irananu. Those umim will be very happy. The amim, the people that were just sort of groups of people not willing to put forth any effort to achieve anything in terms of learning to serve Hashem, they'll be judged. So there'll be two kinds of nations, the good guys, if you will, and the guys who need to be judged. The good guys, the umim, will be dancing for joy. The amim will need to be judged. But then it says, he'll judge them. And then, in the next verse, it says, Yodcha amim elokim. And those amim will give thanks to Hashem. We're getting all mixed up here. The umim are dancing for joy. The amim are being judged. But then the Amim are going to thank Hashem. Avraham says, yes, they're going to thank Hashem for judging them. They're going to thank Hashem that his judgment was one of mercy, and that now they can join the Umim and be rejoicing. So, yes, Aleph is Umim, and Amim is with the Ayin. Did I say it the right way? Yes, Umim is with an Aleph, and Amim is with an Ayin.
Can you repeat that?
Yes. So what he's saying is, in verse 5, the Umim are going to be rejoicing. They're going to be Yismechu v'Iranenu. Because the Umim are the nations that have been helpful to Klal Yisrael and are anxious and joyful to see the times of Mashiach. Those are the Umim. The Sishpot, the judgment, is going to come to the Amim, the peoples that have not been helpful and have not waited for this time. Then in verse 6, the Amim are going to thank Hashem for their judgment. Because even though they were judged mercifully, and therefore they too will be thanking Hashem, and after they're judged, they'll be rejoicing as well.
You have Amim spelled with an I in it.
The ayin, you got umim with an aleph and amim with an ayin.
There's amim also in pesukim.
Yes, you should pass around. Here, take a look at the kudos. So Rav Hirsch says, okay, all these things that I've been trying to explain to you, he says, sounds pretty complicated. And I'm nodding and going, yes, it does. And it not only is it complicated, I'm going to have to explain it to someone else. So he says, let me boil it down here for you. Well, he doesn't actually say boil, but he says, let me summarize it for you. He says that the progression towards Mashiach and all of the world recognizing Hashem is in three stages. First, only we serve Hashem. Then, as the times of Mashiach approach, the leaders of the nations of the world will recognize Hashem, and they will sort of force it upon their people. And then the third stage is the people themselves will all recognize Hashem. So he says you have like a gradual three-stage process. And he says, if you look carefully, you can see that after verse 1 and 2, which talks about us recognizing Hashem, there's a Selah. After verses 3, 4, and 5, about the world accepting Hashem, there's a Selah. And then the third phase is that all of the people, without being forced by their leaders, come to recognize Hashem. So all of this that Rav Hirsch has been saying is deep and it's complicated. And he goes back and forth a lot on how exactly this is going to work. I mean, I basically like the Rambam's quote that we'll know it when we see it, we'll know how it works. But if we're going to try and understand these verses that were shown to Moshe and David in a vision, the idea being, Rav Hirsch says, is that there's a progression towards the times of Mashiach. For a long time, Klal Yisrael serves Hashem by themselves. As we get close to Mashiach's time, the leaders of the world will recognize that we're correct, and they'll sort of schlep the people of the nations along. They'll make a law, everybody has to only worship one God, whatever happens. And then finally, when Mashiach comes, all of the people themselves, the man in the street, so to speak, will recognize Hashem. All of that, he says, is verses 4, 5, and 6. That's what all of that is referring to. That three-stage process in which all of the people will come to recognize Hashem. Done with that subject. In Pasuk Zion, it says something very interesting. In Pasuk Zion, he says, Eretz Nasna Yevula, that the earth will give forth an increase. Yevarchenu Elokim Elokeinu. And our God, our own God, will bless us. So the earth will give forth an increase. Chazal tell us that at the times of Mashiach, there will be an agricultural rebirth. The earth will be almost reborn. The Radak says that And the Radak was writing before there was such a word as pollution. He writes that the waters will become polluted and that they'll have to be cleaned for people to drink, and that'll be a whole problem with the water system of the world. But when Mashiach comes, all of that will disappear and all the water will be perfectly clean. Writes that the earth will give forth and be more fertile and productive than we can even imagine. Chazal say that loaves of bread will grow on the trees. There'll be no need for us to actually pick and bake things. The world will reach its potential. Now, I don't know exactly how that's going to work, and I don't know exactly how the Medrash envisions bread trees. But right now, the world is made that we sort of have to finish the work. You can't go pick some wheat and eat it. I mean, I guess you could, but you have to go bake the bread. Everything that we do to give sustenance to ourselves is to take what Hashem grows forth from the earth and finish it up. Say Chazal, in the times of Mashiach, that won't be necessary. Hashem will feed us, and the earth will give forth what it was meant to give forth. Be that a loaf of bread or whatever, a finished product, fertile lands. That the nature of agriculture will be completely redone in the times of Mashiach. And that's what he means when he says, Eretz not noyavula, that it'll yield up her tremendous increase. And then it says that Hashem, our Hashem, will bless us. Whereas for all those thousands of years, it was our God. Most people weren't joining the train. Now, he says, Hashem will bless everyone, and you know what? He'll still remember that it's Elokeinu, that it was our Hashem, that we were there for all of those thousands of years. And then he says, Yevarcheinu Elokim, Hashem should bless us, v'yiru oso, kol as fe'aretz, and all the ends of the earth will fear him. That's it. That's the entire vision that Hashem showed to Moshe Rabbeinu and to David HaMelech, and to which David HaMelech attributes his success in battle by concentrating on this. Now, it's certainly, despite the fact that I'm, you know, shouting a little over the air conditioning, it's certainly a beautiful, beautiful kapitel. And it would behoove us to go back and look at the way that the words are used. If you were to read this outside of the shir, and I were to ask you to guess which kapitel was responsible for David HaMelech's success and was shown in a vision of gold, would you pick this kapitel? I mean, you might if I told you at 8 Pesukim and it was number 67. But if you were just going through, we've had some kapitel off that certainly would be good candidates, even assuming they're short enough to fit on a shield. Certainly there have been good candidates, and here this kapitel is considered the one that came directly from Shemayim and that contains in it the secret to success. So what is the secret to success that it contains here? That is a really good question. Glad you asked that.
Recognition.
What?
The secret of any success is recognition that Hashem gives you everything. And this is what he's telling you. He's telling you that when you're going to have an agricultural that's going to be so wonderful that you don't have to work on it, we are going to have mun, but in a different shape. Because even the mun had a variation in taste depending on who ate it. So this is also what he's telling us. That this is what's going to happen. It's going to be just like the time of Matan Torah. In the 49, you said that this was the beginning of 49 days. So this is a continuation of what will happen in Matan Torah. This will be a parallel sequence.
I agree completely. Can I elaborate a little bit? I agree with everything you said. In fact, I couldn't have said it better myself. I hope the tape recorder got that, because next time through Tehillim, I'm going to quote that. That was perfect. That was beautiful. That's exactly true. That the secret to the success is recognition. And I just want to add a little nakuda to that. and I went through this a number of times because I wanted to find the Nakuda that fit not only with what we're talking about in David HaMelech and his focus, but with the fact that we culminate this on Shavuos. Right. And I happened to be looking up a tshuva in Rabbi Moshe Sefer Igros Moshe, and it was next to something else there Rabbi Moshe wrote. This is a very famous thing there Rabbi Moshe wrote, is that he had a very, very strong disdain and a very, very strong dislike for what they used to say in this country, especially, you know, before the war, Sishfer zu Zainigin. I don't know if there's anybody here old enough, probably nobody here old enough to remember that. All right? But that used to be Sishfer zu Zainigin. It's tough to be a Jew. Sishfer zu Zainigin. That was an expression that was on everybody's tongue back in the day. Moshe is not the kind of was not the kind of person that got agitated. You know, Moshe went through a lot, never agitated. This agitated him. He said, "How could he say it's so untrue? It's not fair to be a Yid. It's not hard. It's not bad to be a Yid. It's gewaldig to be a Yid. It's terrific to be a Jew. We were chosen by Hashem for a specific task. Now, Hashem is fair. Hashem wouldn't pick us, give us a job that was just too hard. Sorry. If you give someone a job, you have to give them the tools and the equipment to do the job. I have Kanai Nahara two sons. One is 15 years old, about 8'4", and, you know, athletic kind of guy, big kid. I have another son who's 8 years old, about yay high. Now, when I needed some huge, heavy things moved down in the basement, who did I call? I called called the 8-year-old, but I didn't have any success. So eventually I had to call the older kid. So if Hashem chose us to be the people that would be a light unto the nations, it's only fair and logical to figure that we had to have been given greater abilities spiritually in order to be able to accomplish that task. Therefore, we have more ability to appreciate Hashem because of the fact that we're Jews. Now, if we remember in the Chumash who Paro was the ruler of Egypt and was as close to king of the world as there could be in those days. Moshe and Aaron go to Paro because they want the Jews to be released. They don't beg. They don't cringe. They don't say, please do us a favor. They don't try and say, we're such great Egyptians that you should help us out. They stand in Paro's court and they stand there with their Jewish clothes and their Jewish language, and they say, let us go. It seems that part of that lesson has been forgotten over time. Sishfer tzayni yid. So people used to say, you know what? Let's not act like a yid. The more we act like other nations of the world, the more we assimilate, the more everybody will like us. So I think after a couple of world wars, there's not too many people that are still a big fan of that approach. And we don't think like that. We go out in public wearing a yarmulke. We are Jewish right out in the open. But you know what? We still have a little bit of that problem of Tzisfer Tzishayna Yid. Tzishayna Yid. We still feel... a little bit uncomfortable when it comes time to be Jewish in the world. If you work in an office with non-Jewish workers and they say, hey, let's get some lunch at the pizza shop, and you have to explain to them that you keep kosher, how do you feel about that? Do you feel a warm glow inside that Baruch Hashem, I was selected for this? Or do you feel it's good and I'm doing it, but there's a tinge of uncomfortableness? What about if you have to tell someone, I'm sorry, I don't shake hands with people of the opposite gender? For people in my profession, davening on airplanes is a big thing. How do you feel when you go up and you ask the flight attendant, can I use your galley for my morning prayers? Do you feel all aglow? Or do you feel like I'm doing this, it's a mitzvah, it's good, but there's just a tinge of uncomfortableness? I'm going to read you the first halacha on the Shulchan Aruch. First halacha on the Shulchan Aruch. Now remember, the Shulchan Aruch is not a book of Musar. It's not a book of Hashkafa. It's a book that was intended to be an easy layman's guide that everybody could learn. A summary of all the halachas before it. Now it's, you know, volume and volume, but it was intended to be, by the Mechaber, by the author, an easy guide. So we're going to boil everything down. We're just going to give you the simple halachas you need to do. End of story. No shkafa, no musar, no teaching, nothing. Halacha number one. One should strengthen himself like a lion to get up in the morning to serve his creator. I thought we just said we weren't going to have any musar or a shkafa. Well, apparently, it's not musar, it's not a shkafa. Apparently, the author of the Shulchan Aruch felt that the first halacha is that you get up in the line of like a lion in the morning to serve Hashem. What does that mean? That means that when David HaMelech saw this vision, and he saw this kapitel, and he saw what was going to be in the times of Mashiach, how did he feel? Did he feel says shver to zayne yid? Chas v'shalom. Says gevaldik. Zayne yid, David HaMelech felt. And he recognized that everything is coming from Hashem, and Hashem gives all the people of the world, but he's picked us even more to give. He's picked us to give even more than everybody else to. So just like we have to recognize that everything is coming from Hashem, and that's certainly the key to David HaMelech's success in all of his endeavors. Right? Here he's recognizing, you know what? I'm going to keep in my proper perspective that Hashem has picked us to give us even more than everything else. It says gevaldik to be a yid. It doesn't say that David HaMelech learned this kapitel before he went out to battle. It says he concentrated and meditated on it. Meditated and thought about it over and over and over. To feel says gevaldik to be a yid. Look at what Hashem is doing for us. That's why he inscribed it on his shield, so that when he's out in battle, and most of us have never been in battle, and Emirat Hashem never will be, there's something called the, and I've mentioned this once in Shir, there's something called the fog of war. When you're in a battle, things happen quickly all around. We think of a battle, you know, if you've ever played a video game or a board game, you make your move, and then you go get a drink from the refrigerator and make the next move. It doesn't work that way in war. Things happen fast and furiously. You have a split second to make life and death decisions for hour after hour and day after day after day. One lost moment of concentration in the fog of war and you're shooting at the wrong person. It's very hard to keep your head when you're in a battle. David HaMelech concentrated on what was written on his shield to remind himself, look what Hashem is doing for me. Hashem is giving me everything. And Hashem is going to provide for us. And Hashem, once again, we're going to sit and Hashem is going to give forth bread already baked from the land. It says, Gevaldik to be a yid. Hashem says, attack, follow me. That's why he had it engraved on his shield. And that's what he meditated on and concentrated on that allowed him to be successful in battle. Because also he never lost a battle with his shield. Is he a super strong guy? Well, he is actually. He had the right approach and the right kavana of recognizing that, you know what, it's not enough to appreciate Hashem like everybody else does. If we were given more ability to be a light amongst the nations, then we were given more ability to appreciate Hashem. You can't be a light if you don't have more light than what's around you. So therefore, these 49 words that David HaMelech concentrated on represented to him 49 levels of spiritual accomplishment, culminating in recognizing that everything comes from Hashem, and not just everything comes from Hashem, but it's tremendous that everything comes from Hashem. I couldn't be happier. Be happy to be Jewish, is what David HaMelech is telling you here. Because look what you're going to get. It's great to be Jewish. And on Shavuos, how do we feel when we get to Torah? Happy. What do we do on Shavuos? We stay up when we get to Torah and we daven. You're supposed to feel happy on Shavuos that you got the Torah. Culmination of 49 days of thinking about how happy we are to be part of the people that are getting the Torah. So David HaMelech had the same thing on his shield. Instead of using 49 days then getting the Torah, he had 49 words and then he went out to battle. So I think if we can sum up the lesson that David HaMelech is giving us here by recording this vision, and by engraving it on his sword, and by putting it where he does in the Sefer Tehillim, is that we have an ability to appreciate and be happy about being Jewish beyond even what we can imagine. And it's our responsibility to go and to do that, to feel that simcha, to feel that happiness, because we recognize that everything is coming from Hashem, Baruch Hashem, and He will be the source of everything. And we'll put that on our shields, go forth and fight our battles in life. Questions?
How do you describe simcha?
There's you see in the psukim, there's simcha and there's rina. So simcha is more of the internal feeling of happiness. And Rina is more of the external whoop-de-doo. Whoop-de-doo is not really a Talmudic term. Simcha is internal happiness that comes from recognizing that you are pleased with your circumstances. Well, we throw the word around simcha all the time. I mean, but what it really means in the Nach, simcha, there's different kinds of joy that a person can feel. You know, Rina is more of the woohoo, we won the battle, we're dancing around.